clouds are counting down, about to put the anchor down. Hotty toddy, who's it gonna be? Every Thursday at this time, when you hear that music, you know who's next. Paul Feinbaum. Brought to you by MTGRT.com, your live and local mortgage expert. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, guys. How's everybody?
Everybody's good here. It's a little rainy here in Nashville, but that's okay. We'll take a little bit of rain every once in a while. I'm going to start with somewhere you probably didn't expect me to start on the show, because we're in college football season. But we were talking about in the first segment, and I just want to get your take on it because of this conference. And I'm going to phrase it this way. Would you see what these guys are doing at the next level in the NBA, like Tyler Hero last night for the Heat, Bam Adebayo for the Heat, and Jamal Murray for Denver? And, you know, I could go on Devin Booker, what he's done in Phoenix. These guys leave Kentucky and not only are being productive, Paul, they're turning into superstars. So the question I have, is it fair to ask if John Calipari is getting the most out of them at Kentucky in that one-year window, or is it unfair because they're 18 years old, it's hard to make all that work in a one-year window, and as they get older and they mature, they blossom into these professional athlete superstars? So where do you lean on that?
I think it's very fair. It's a legitimate question, and I frankly have asked it before in the past, much to the chagrin of Kentucky fans, especially after the perfect season blew up. I think it was in 2015 against Wisconsin in that national semifinal game. I think Cal is a fantastic coach, but you guys know Cal sells his program not on the conventional Kentucky approach, which every other Kentucky coach has done, winning the national championship. He sells it on draft night.
Yeah,
you come here, and the biggest night of your college career is going to be when you get drafted, whether you're in the lottery or wherever. And that does not play well with the old line Kentucky fan. I'm not talking about the modern fan. I'm talking about the way back fan. Who was either a kid or, you know, their grandpa told them about the days of Adolph Rupp and on down. And I think there is a culture clash there. And, his career's not over yet. And I thought he had a really good team last year that, you know, would have had a shot, you know, a little bit from the outside, which is more Cal's way. But, 2012 is the only championship, and there are a lot of missed opportunities. The year before, with the team that is littered by NBA players right now, as you guys know, one in particular who's maybe leading the Lakers to a championship, and all the names that you just got through mentioning, and Cal has blown a couple of big championships. He's had others, and I don't think one is for that amount of talent, one isn't enough.
Hmm. Do you remember Bam Adebayo at Kentucky? I mean, did you see this coming?
It seems like I remember seeing him for a second.
Like most of those guys. The culture class is such a good way of putting it, Paul, because you know there's Kentucky fans that can name the starting five year after year for decades, right? But it gets harder when the guys change every year. It's not like Farmer and Pelfrey and Mashburn that for three straight years were the guys, right? You just don't have a nucleus like that anymore.
No, and that's what, Cal sells that too. And just think about it. If you're the number one, whatever, point guard or big man in the country, and you grow up and, just throw a dart at the country, Indianapolis, Nashville, New Orleans, Texas. Outside of, local ties, it's not hard to come up with a five places to visit. You start Duke, North Carolina, Kentucky, and then you, depending on what part of the country you're in, you might slip in, Villanova or Syracuse or UCLA or somewhere else meet where the region of your country, but Kentucky ought to be on everyone's list. So I don't think it's difficult. to recruit there, and especially when you have somebody like him, and especially when he sells the past and the hundreds of millions of dollars that have been earned. But today, there's argument, and I haven't watched much college basketball in the last few months, but there's a tug of war between the one and done and building a team, and look at Cal. He acquires the biggest and most impressive talent. Although for about 2 years he was missing out on a couple of players, I think he's making back up for it now.
Yeah. What do you make of the Cade Mays saga for Tennessee, and what did you make of the commissioner's comments this week about the rule? Like, hey, rules are rules, and that's what you guys voted on. What do you make of that?
Yeah, rules are rules, and the SEC had a rule until recently that they played 8 conference games. So
fair.
Point. I don't Feinbaum.
In today's modern world, I really don't believe in any rules. I am for the player, and I understand. I was there at the meetings when they passed that. It's not like I'm acting like I wasn't sitting around the pool that day in Destin. I remember. And there's reason for it. And these are administrators and coaches who want to protect their turf. But I find it just insane to listen to, name your coach, whether it's Saban or Kirby Smart or someone else, argue and try to keep someone from going someplace else. To me, how many times have you heard a coach say, well, so-and-so doesn't want to be here, I don't want him to be here. Well, then let him go. The commissioner's correct. But ultimately you have to get the schools to sign off on it. And I just think it's a ridiculous rule that, especially today when there are so many mitigating circumstances.
Who voted on that? Was it the coaches, or did you say coaches and administrators?
Well, ultimately this is how it works. I hate to sound like a wonk here, but I've gone to too many of these meetings. Coaches make recommendations to their ADs. The ADs pass it along. And ultimately, the presidents of the league make recommendations. They're the ones who vote on all legislation. So, these are things coaches wanted. I say for good reason, but so what? I mean, if you lose going back to basketball, if you lose Tyler Hero, you lose him to Alabama or Tennessee, it might affect your season a little bit more. But name me one player leaving an SEC school for another that's going to make that much of a difference. I mean, is Cade Mays, is he going to cost Georgia the Tennessee game this year? I doubt it.
Talking to Paul Feinbaum. He joins us every week at this time now. Paul, as we look, it's our first SEC Saturday coming up here. But before we get into some of the matchups here, we've kind of kicked this around throughout the week. It is going to be different. Like, what separates the SEC? It's the atmosphere, the environment, the pageantry. Everybody's got to sacrifice some of that this week. I just try to think of some of the fans that are loyal listeners to your show, for example, that they got to change rituals that they've been doing for decades here.
Yeah, and I mean, I have found if you promise not to quote me on this, the first 3 weeks of the college football season to be utterly boring. Louisiana beating Iowa State was interesting, and Kansas State losing to, I think it was, Arkansas State, and Miami's looked good. But I mean, without the SEC, and I include the Big Ten. I mean, people accuse me of being an SEC clown, but that's okay. I mean, I've missed the Big Ten too, because you at least have a variety. Finally, this week, for the first time, you flip on the TV and you're likely to get a pretty good game. Not guaranteed, there's something to at least lock into, but the atmospheres are going to be different, and I'm still not sure the average fan is accepting of this. I've had countless callers ask me this: hey, which game are you going to? Well, none. I mean, it's just, you go where your bosses send you, and it's a different world right now. There are a lot of hoops to go through to cover a game in any conference right now for various companies, including the one I work for. And that part's different. I've done our show every Friday from the campus. That's not happening this year. Saturday shows are going to be different, and I still think it's going to be really good. But I had an older friend call me the other day and said, "Man, this is the greatest time of the year." And I mean, it is great, but it's not as great as it's been. But I will say it's better than it could have been with no football. So I'll end this soliloquy on at least a positive note.
No question about it. You've done some analysis on all the teams in the league, but I'm really curious your thoughts on LSU. I know there's been some recent discussion on, you know, especially with Ed Orgeron on 60 Minutes and maybe in the spotlight to an audience outside of the SEC, but defending national champion LSU, what are your thoughts on what they'll be able to do with all the losses they had?
I don't know how they can recover. You know, I'm not going to pick on fans of schools because, you know, without rabid, overzealous fans, we would all be in trouble. But, you know, I mean, LSU fans are calling up and saying, you know, we're going to be better than last year. No, you're not. I mean, just pick a position. You lost the best quarterback you've ever had. And this year you've already lost your best wide receiver in addition to losing a couple from last year. They may have some of the best defensive players in the country, but they lost Allaire, who is now tearing it up in the NFL. They've lost their two main coaches from last year, other than Orgeron. So, I mean, I think if Ed Orgeron can go 8-2, he's done a fantastic job. But 8-2 after a perfect season is probably not going to satisfy very many people. So, yeah, I think they'll get by Saturday against Mississippi State, but I see them losing at least two games, maybe more. LSU has become Alabama in their own mind, but not in mine.
We're talking to Paul Feinbaum, brought to you by MTGRT.com, your live and local mortgage expert. He joins us every Thursday at 10:15 here on Darren Donick and Chase. So when you look at Auburn, how much pressure would you say is on them this year in this unique schedule with an all SEC schedule to perform? Because you've worked in that state. You know that Alabama obviously has their following, but Auburn, Gus Malzahn, it seems like the pressure is always on to get it done. So how much do you think is on them this year?
I think there's a little bit less for this reason. Gus Malzahn, for those who don't remember, his first season, they were expected to go about 6-6, and he came within 13 seconds of a national championship. So that bought him some time. Since then, it's been like watching the stock market. It's been up and down and sideways and all over the place. But what he did last November in beating Alabama again, I think bought him some time. He was almost fired 2 years ago, except there was about a $30 million buyout. But that was such an epic win against Nick Saban. It was the third time he's beaten Saban. And, you know, find me someone else who can claim that. So that does carry a lot of weight. But he is a coach that probably frustrates his fan base more than almost anyone else that has a chance to be really good. I mean, there's some others that take care of that and being mediocre. The problem with this opening game, and I know it's a convenient, everyone wants to pick an upset in the first weekend, and a lot of people are picking Kentucky to beat them. If that happens, then I think they turn around and play Georgia next, which is not a good start for them. And I'm fixated on this right now because, you know, adjusting to a 10-game season, you start 0-1 then go 0-2, you better hold on for your life. Because you don't want to be out of this thing too quickly. And normally in a 12-game season, that's not going to happen. But in a shortened schedule, which could even be shorter than 10, that would be a disaster.
Well, and that kind of leads me to the other side of the question, because for years, and you know, Paul, that it was always, they're playing Kentucky. All right, cool. Take care of that and move on. It hasn't been the case. I mean, they have certainly been a team to watch in the SEC. So you alluded to a lot of people picking the upset. Do you think that Kentucky can hold on to some of the success that they've had over the last few years and continue to not necessarily be at the top of the heap, but be one of those teams that you have to prepare for a little more than you used to?
Yeah, this Kentucky is not an easy win, but I also you know, I thought Kentucky blew an opportunity or two last year to continue the step forward. The Florida game got away from them. They had a chance to win it. That's always the critical early season game for them. The Tennessee game got away from them. So there were two games that I thought Kentucky, you know, probably should have won that didn't. And as a result, they're still right there in the middle. It would be a huge win for them, but I still see Kentucky being passed by Tennessee. The one thing about the SEC East that I think a lot of people have looked past is outside of Georgia, how bad it has been lately. I mean, you've got teams that are, you know, like Vanderbilt and Missouri who are really not that competitive or haven't been. South Carolina has been a disappointment. It's been an easier division to make hay than perhaps in the past. I think that's changing, and I think it's changing because of Tennessee. Maybe on Monday this next statement will look pretty silly, but I really see this program ascending. I think Jeremy Pruitt is a fantastic evaluator of talent. I think he's built a good staff. And I think this program is on the cusp of moving up. Now, I don't want to lead into your next question about South Carolina, but I will. This is a really big game, because of the schedule, and this is almost a line I'll use on any school. You lose that first game that you're supposed to win. And suddenly you look around and you still have Florida, Georgia, Auburn, Alabama. So it's a critical game.
You read my mind, Paul. You knew where I was going to go. How big of a difference do you think Mike Bobo can be now that he's on that coaching staff at South Carolina?
Well, I think he has to help. He better help because, he did bring a quarterback with him. So I think that's a big deal because – Will Muschamp has not really shown anything in his tenure at South Carolina. And, I always try to, stipulate when I'm talking to reporters, let's talk about Will Muschamp without you telling me I really like Will Muschamp. Because I don't, by the way, I'm going to throw that in there about Derek Mason as well. I really don't care whether you like the guy. I just want to know whether he can coach. And Will Muschamp in 4 years at Florida and 4 years at South Carolina has yet to prove he's a successful head coach in the SEC.
Can you confirm or will you deny that you've been hired by Deion Sanders to be on his staff?
I just want to know one thing. I mean, I try to have a good attitude in life, and I read all these books, but I just wish one day I could smile as much as Deion Sanders. I mean, I watched him on some show. I think it was First Take yesterday. And the guy, I don't know. I mean, maybe this is his dream job. But I've never seen anybody happier about coaching at Jackson State in my life. I mean, I think he will be successful because players want to be around guys like that.
So you think he will be successful?
Yeah, I think he'll be successful enough. Now, okay. Let me offer a caveat. I don't think he, even though he said he wants to live the rest of his life there, I think he'll use this as a stepping stone. And if he can bring some good players in there, which I think he can, he'll pressure Florida State at one point to hire him. Because, there were people that – when I heard his name mentioned at Florida State about a year ago, I was like, really? But I've already heard people mention that he could be a coach in the future there. Mike Norvell is only he's only coached one game. I think he's not going to coach this weekend, but he better be looking over his shoulder.
Interesting, Paul. Always a pleasure. Thank you so much. Continue to be safe. Have a great show. We'll talk to you next week.
Guys, thanks. It's always fun to be on.
Paul Feinbaum, brought to you by MTGRT.com. Your live and local mortgage expert. We'll come back. More of Darren Donick and Chase here in the first hour. ESPN 102.5 The Game.